Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
So, Chris Murphy, United States Senate, it's heady stuff. How do you keep it from becoming too heady?
You go home every day to a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old who don't really care what issue you worked on that day or whether you passed a bill or had a bill filibustered by the Republicans. So, my greatest check, my greatest grounding is, my family back home. And that's more important to me than anything. I have... Sense every single day that I wake up that I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I was told by a friend when I first got elected to the House of Representatives that when you leave work every night, look back up at the Capitol Dome gleaming in the spotlights and recognize the shiver that runs down your spine. And he said the day that you don't feel that when you walk out the door at the end of the day, go back in your office and pen your resignation letter because you have to feel the sense of honor and the sense of inspiration by being here. And listen, it's a super frustrating place. And most days I go home at the end of the day feeling like I didn't make the difference that I had planned on. But then there are those breakthroughs. There are those projects that get funded for your state. There are those moments when things happen, like the healthcare law passing, where you feel like you've made a difference. And I'm just inspired and honored to have the job. It's definitely heady stuff, and I recognize that, and it powers and energizes me every day.
Did any famous people sit at your desk?
William Fulbright did. So, what we're referencing is that we have desks in the Senate chamber that get passed down from Congress to Congress. And so, there's Daniel Webster's desk and, there's the Kennedy desk. And I have Senator Lieberman's desk. There are a number of people who sat there. Probably the most notable of them was Fulbright. Some people sort of fight to get certain desks. I haven't yet gotten around to trying to pick out the desk that I want. I've been a little bit busy trying to get the office up and running and working on projects.
Do they have any recognition at each desk, a little plaque saying who sat there?
So what you do is that when you leave your desk or when you leave the Senate, you, middle schooler, initial your name into the desk.
No kidding.
Yeah, so when you open these desks, you can see the people who had the desk because they have most of the time carved their name in, sometimes written it in a marker. And then the historian of the Senate keeps a record so that for those that didn't sign the desk, and there are many who didn't long ago, that wasn't the tradition, you can find out a little bit more.
I always thought of Bill Fulbright as a sort of formidable man. Hard to imagine him whittling his name into the desk.
Yeah, I will say this, that I don't think that Senator Lieberman had done a lot of woodworking before he put his name into the desk because the quality and the craftsmanship of his initialing leaves something to be desired. You step into that place and you have that sense of history. I mean, every corner of the Capitol has, a story to it. And, for anybody that has any interest in the Senate, pick up Robert Caro's book on LBJ as leader of the Senate. Read the first 100 pages. You don't even have to read the rest of the book, but the first 100 pages is the best, most concise history of the Senate with its great moments and its forgettable moments. I read that for the second time in between the election and my swearing in.
Fabulous. Just fabulous. Let's go to Social Security and to health care. We know the Tea Party people were talking about doing away with Social Security and replacing it with vouchers. Is there any movement or is that completely dead?
Well, the proposal from the Tea Party folks is to do away with Medicare and replace it with a voucher system. So instead of having a guaranteed benefit, you just sort of get a coupon and you'd go out and buy private insurance. And the problem with that is that the coupon would essentially stay the same value, whereas healthcare goes up by, 6, 7, 8% a year. And so over the course of time, you would be paying $6,000, $7,000 more out of pocket. Listen, that idea is dead for the time being because we have a Democratic Senate, we have a president in the White House. But you know, should the Republicans take over the Senate and a Republican win the White House, there's certainly the possibility that an idea like that could get passed. And it's not really actually a Tea Party idea. I mean, I don't necessarily affiliate Paul Ryan at all times with the Tea Party, but that's his plan. And so there are relatively mainstream Republicans who want to do away with Medicare. And, you know, as long as they don't run the Senate and they don't have the White House, that won't ever become law.
We get a lot of calls from listeners. We had one today on our early morning program. People saying, you know, come on now, cut out the Obamacare and let's have universal health care. Is that ever going to happen in this country?
Well, listen, it may happen, but probably not in my lifetime. I think that, you know, what the healthcare law is, which is essentially giving tax breaks to individuals through tax credits to buy private healthcare insurance, was so radical that most people believe it to be socialized medicine and a government takeover of our healthcare system. Imagine what would have been the claim had you done a Medicare for all or single payer healthcare system. And so I think the reality is that the country was not ready for that kind of conversion of our healthcare system. And what we did, of course, has worked. What we did, which was better regulate the insurance companies so that they can't abuse their position as your insurer and give people access to affordable health care with these tax credits, has reduced the number of uninsured by 25% in 6 months, has dramatically reduced the rate of health care inflation, and improved outcomes. Quality is getting better, too, which is really the most important thing. I know people believe that the law didn't go as far as they would like, but I think it is important to note that what we did, as imperfect as it is working better than even most of the architects of the bill would have thought.
This morning on NPR, I guess I heard a story about people who were saying, hey, we can't do our jobs, our businesses, without increased immigration flow now that the job market is looking so much better and healthier. We can't find the right people. We need to have a more, you know, open immigration program. What do you think?
Well, depending on the industry, I think that many of them are right. I mean, I was, on this farm for a day in northwestern Connecticut, and, you know, they are amongst the thousands of farms all across the country who are clamoring for immigration reform because they cannot find American citizens who are willing to do some of the lower paid, tougher, dirtier work on that farm. And because the price of milk is regulated, they don't have the ability to pay more than, you know, basically a little bit above a minimum wage for the job, so that they don't have the flexibility in the labor market that you would like. Which is why I think we've got to do comprehensive immigration reform. I think we likely will in the next 2 years. And, you know, that means getting tougher on the borders and fixing the existing legal pathway, but then also saying to the 11, 12 million people that are here that they should have a process to stay. And that's important for them, for those people. It's important, I think, for the conscience of the country, but it's also important for those businesses that, in certain instances are having a tough time finding American workers who will do certain jobs.
So, Senator Chris Murphy, in the next minute and a half, tell us how we should be treating Putin at this stage of the game.
Well, Ukraine matters much more to Putin than it matters to us, and we shouldn't pretend that we live in the Cold War any longer, where every action by the Russians has to be met with an equal reaction from the United States or the West. Everything Putin is doing is a panicked reaction to a very weak position in which these former republics and satellite states are attempting to join Europe. And he is doing everything in his power, including using force to stop them. But there is an inevitability to those countries turning to the West. Putin, in the long run, cannot stop him. And so we have to impose sanctions on him. We can't allow him to get away with this aggression. But we also shouldn't fall back into a way of understanding the world that is obsolete. The world is not organized around who's with Russia and who's with the United States. The fight against ISIS matters much more to the U.S. than the the fight over Ukraine. And so I argue for a very strong American response to what Putin has done in Ukraine, but I don't support some of my friends, especially in the neoconservative Republican world, who would like us to start arming the Ukrainian opposition. That probably goes too far.
United States Senator Chris Murphy, we feel like you're an alumni of WAMC University, and we are so proud of you. So thank you so much for doing this with
us. Good to be back, and we'll do it again.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Chris.
All right, bye-bye.